I'm Elizabeth Sanders Park, and I am the president of WorkNet Solutions. So one of the primary ways that we serve in the kingdom and in partnership with Crew is that we have created many moons ago at this point a biblically based career development and job placement model and tools for use with organizations all across the country, in fact around the world. And lots of Crew industry partners use WorkNet in their employment ministries. I co-authored the book No One is Unemployable, and then I had the chance to do the research and writing on a soft skills curriculum and learned a lot of things that I'll share with you today that I think could be interesting and contribute to the work you're doing, and then you'll get some exposure to this particular series in case it makes sense in your ministry somewhere or elsewhere in your life. So, a wife and mother and a servant of the Most High God. So I'm going to start with a quick video, and this really endeavors to answer the question, what do people need to succeed in work today? I will concede that work is this very interesting piece in the life of a human, the life of a Christian. In some ways, work is not, well, in most ways, work is not the most important thing going on in a person's life. Lack of a job is not necessarily the most important problem they're facing, even if that seems to be the struggle. And so sometimes what happens is people want to reach out to work as a solution, but work is not necessarily a solution for homelessness. It can be part of the solution, for sure. It's not necessarily part of the solution. It's not the solution for addiction. It's not the solution for mental illness. There are other things that have to happen first, and then work can be part of the, I call it the glorious glue that holds together things like mental health and housing and staying clean and sober. So it plays this really wonderful role, but it's not really the most important thing happening. And then in a spiritual sense, in a Christian sense, work plays this really interesting role in our lives. I mean, we are made in the image of God, and in the beginning God created. You know, God is a God who works, is productive and creative and innovative, and we were given responsibility from our first interactions with God, and so it is this interesting piece in the life of a Christian. So I created this little whiteboard video, or had it created, and it's simply endeavoring to ask the question, what do people need to succeed at work? And we could have done the, you know, 127 things people need to succeed at work, but of course that's overwhelming. So we've come up with four categories of skills, four skill groupings that really capture the various things that people need. And you're working with people, some of whom can check off some of those boxes, and then you can sort of figure out how do you backfill and help them maybe cultivate the pieces that are missing. And then we work with folks for whom they really can't check off any of these boxes. So we will focus on soft skills, which is one of the boxes, but we can take a look at this basic framework for, again, what do people need to succeed in the world of work? Every day in America, talented, hardworking people are searching for work. And every day, employers are searching for talented, hardworking people. Yet millions of jobs remain unfilled. Why is this? Because there is a skills gap. Candidates don't have the skills employers want. So what do employers want? There are four groups of skills needed to succeed today, and they build on one another. It's kind of like baking a birthday cake. Picture a tasty, beautiful birthday cake served up on a platter just for you. That platter is foundational. It's not the main event. In fact, we often don't even notice it. The same is true for the first group of skills. Basic life and academic skills are the platter. They include maintaining your health and hygiene, interacting with others appropriately and getting along, the ability to read, write, speak, speak up, do fundamental math, and manage your personal finances. They include having the context that comes from understanding history, geography, culture, language and literature, plus problem-solving skills, personal organization, and more. These basic life and academic skills are essential, but they're expected. They're a solid foundation, a platter on which to build. People won't be impressed if you have them, but you've got to have them. The second group of skills is the specific technical skills needed to do a job. They are the cake on the platter, and they top the list of requirements on most job postings and job descriptions.
Technical skills may include the ability and knowledge to use a particular software platform, maneuver a machine or vehicle, speak a foreign language, crunch numbers, sell, sing, create computer apps, input data, make people feel welcome, cook a specific kind of food, even bake a cake, and more. It depends on the job because each position requires a unique set of technical skills. Employers value technical skills and are willing to pay for them. Employers are also far more willing to train technical skills than any of the others. The third group of skills is workplace excellence. Everyone likes cake, but all by itself, it's a little lonely on the plate. Frosting a cake, adding a border, and decorating makes it attractive, memorable, desirable. In the same way, workplace excellence skills take your life, academic, and technical skills to the next level. These skills include having a strong work ethic, fitting the company culture and image, maintaining a productive mindset, getting along with others, communicating verbally, non-verbally, and in writing, ensuring your personal life doesn't disrupt your work life, being honest and reliable, learning continuously, adapting quickly, and more. When you have strong workplace excellence skills, you don't just have icing on the cake. You've got candles, on roses, on sprinkles, on icing on the cake. That brings us to the final skills group. Being qualified to do the work, even being the very best candidate for the job, isn't enough. You must convince the people who will make the final decision. Job search and career management skills serve up all the others so decision makers can see your value. These skills include choosing jobs, researching, connecting with acquaintances and strangers, communicating your value on paper, online, over the phone, and in person, and following up. They also include knowing how to pursue a raise or a promotion, continuing your education, and even job searching while you're working. We've all heard stories of people who lost out to someone who was less qualified. Why? Because the other person had stronger job search and career management skills. These skills mobilize all the others. So let's recap. 1. Basic life and academic skills are foundational. You don't get extra credit for having them, and you could face problems if you don't, because everything else is built upon them. They are the platter, and every day you have the chance to build and strengthen these powerful skills. Hone them starting today. 2. Employers highly value technical skills. They are the cake, the very things employers advertise for and ask about. Discover the technical skills required by the job you want, then build these skills and keep them sharp. 3. Workplace excellence skills often make the difference between success and failure once you are on the job. They are the icing on the cake. Your technical skills won't matter much if you can't get to work or can't get along. Find good role models and mentors and master these essential skills now. Finally, job search and career management skills mobilize all the others, serving them up so potential employers can decide to hire, keep, and promote you. If you can do this, employers won't be able to resist. Good luck.
So there's some framework for thinking. You might do it differently, but it gives us a common language. And again, the two pieces that I wanted to focus on. So we've got basic life and academic skills. That is a huge category. There are, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people working and serving in our communities to help people do exactly that. Basic life and academic skills. It's a big group and a good foundation. The other three are much more focused categories having to do with the work piece. So technical skills, the not so soft skills, and then the career management and job search skills. So soft skills, which the Department of Labor is calling essential workplace skills. We're translating this whole curriculum into Spanish with a really godly woman who's at Templo Calvario in Southern California, a really neat woman. And so we're talking about maybe calling them las habilidades vitales, I think I'm missing an E. And we call it workplace excellence. I've taken to calling it the not-so-soft skills, because when we say workplace excellence or essential workplace skills, nobody really knows what we're talking about. It's the soft skills piece, but soft skills as a term... lacks the strength, the importance, et cetera, that we might want. And then, of course, the job search and career management piece is what the WorkNet program that CREW has been using for many years addresses. So if you do not already have familiarity with that and think that you may want to have an employment ministry, you could talk with Wayne about that. They do a great job of training people up and supporting ministries all over the country who want to do an employment ministry. So our focus is on the soft skills piece. Let's do this. Let's put ourselves in the shoes of the employer for a moment. I don't know if you've owned businesses or led departments or supervised teams or what your experience has been. But if you were the employer, you were the one who was going to hire, fire, choose, what are some of the soft skills? When I say soft skills, what comes to mind for you and what do you think would be important for you? Being there on time, working hard while you are there.
Getting along with others.
Getting along with others, yeah.
Probably related attitude, just somehow how you come along.
Yeah, and attitude shows up in a lot of ways, including how you get along with others, yeah. Other thoughts that come to mind?
You said hygiene.
Hygiene, yeah. Yeah, and we started talking to employers, we got this long, long, long list, and it was things like manage your hygiene, take care of your personal relationships and your family stuff so they're not, you know, we understand you're a human being and we don't want to say completely separate who you are from what you do, but we can't have quite so much of your personal life disrupting what's happening here on the job. They talked about mental health issues and, you know, keeping your housing and all sorts of things that are really not workforce focused, but those are the life and academic skills, and without those things, it's a little bit hard to focus on being amazing on the job. And then we heard some other categories. So we ended up sort of calling out from there the ones that we wanted to focus on. But what we decided to do was really start by talking to employers, because we had people using the same terms to mean different things and different terms to mean the same things. And everybody's sort of all over the place. So we all know the challenge that we face, that employers are really crying out for someone to deal with the soft skills. And as much as they want this, they don't really want to train it. I have been delightfully surprised at how many, we've created this solution, how many employers have said to us, can you come teach the people I already hired? Because they've got a job and they do really well in some ways, but I don't think they really understand a lot of this. And sometimes they're bringing us in to work with young workers, entry-level workers, new hires, problematic employees, but they're bringing us in to work with the rising stars and their managers, communication skills among managers, working in intergenerational teams among the leadership. So we're working with not only unemployed folks, some of them really long-term, chronically unemployed with you know, just a lot of extra explaining to do. Some more recently unemployed and have got decent experience and education, and then employees at all levels. So we know employers want this. In general, they don't want to have to train it. They just want people to magically have all of these things. And yet, if they didn't get it at home and they didn't get it in school, and employers don't want to train it, it's just a real opportunity to help people manage their work life by teaching these things. So study after study shows how important this is. And if you listen to employers, you hear them say things like this. Right? So the bottom line there is, if you send us people who care what we do and who can show up on time and get along, we'll teach them the hard skills. Now, they don't say that about brain surgeons, you know, the higher the skill, you need the technical skills, but for so many of the jobs that many of us do, they will train us on the hard skills if we have some raw talent and we can do these other things. So we just heard this over and over again. So we very strategically gathered groups of employers together, and we wanted to talk to employers across industries, and we wanted to talk to employers who hire entry level all the way up to higher level to really get a sense of, you know, what is the nature of the challenge. So if we're going to try and find a solution, I was working with a particular group in Maryland, we're going to find a solution for their job seekers, or if there isn't one we can find, we'll create one, which is what we ended up doing. So we asked some basic questions. What are the top soft skills? AAWDC is the partnering agency. What are the top skills we should be teaching? What's missing? And then are there particular skills missing in terms of certain groups? Younger workers, older workers, displaced, reemployed, career changers, veterans, TANF is welfare. So welfare to work, ex-offenders, tech workers, people with disabilities, immigrants. Those are some of the groups that came up as perhaps needing some unique attention on some of these soft skills. And then how does the presence or lack of these skills impact your bottom line? We also asked important questions about, you know, what does it look like to you? So if this is what's lacking, what would it look like if it were present, right? How would you know it when you saw it? Part of the challenge with soft skills is they're hard to measure. They're hard to define. They're intangible. And what we've tried to do is, you know, we talk about the unwritten rules, the unspoken expectations. Well, we've tried to write them down and speak them out and really proactively help people understand and take them on. And take them on in a way that honors who they are as an individual, but also will work for the companies that they work at. So this is what we asked. And in the end, very simply, soft skills are the non-technical skills required to do a job and to succeed in the workforce in general, pretty broad definition. And we decided what we would do is to find or create a solution for how to teach soft skills, the not-so-soft skills, that directly improve a person's ability to enter and succeed in today's workforce. So we're not teaching how to find and maintain housing. You know, I'm not teaching you how to drive a forklift. It's that piece in the middle. So, long lists of all sorts of things going in many different directions. This is what we boiled it down to. We do have some specific lists that we got clear on about what was most important for youth or most important for an older worker, most important for people coming out of prison. But this, in the end, is what employers really prioritize as the most important things. They're lacking. They're important, and they benefit the individuals we teach and, of course, the companies where they serve. A couple of other things. So what I would encourage you to do as we're kind of walking through this is two things. If you want to see the solution, explore whether that's a good solution for your ministry or even, you know, a company or where your significant other or your adult children or, you know, companies can use this, lots of ways to use this, then we can talk more about the specific curriculum. But even short of that, as you're mentoring people, as you're discipling people, as you're taking a look at what the other things your ministry is doing, you take a look at, is there more of an opportunity to not just be covert or continue to kind of assume the unspoken and unwritten rules about these things in the work you do with people and be much more conscious and practical about how we address these things. A couple of other things we learned as we were kind of walking through this, there were some things we wanted to weave throughout the curriculum, throughout the whole approach. Employers would say challenging a sense of entitlement. And we've heard a little bit about that since we've been here, but I remember being surprised in talking with employers because I assumed they were talking about young workers, inexperienced workers, millennials, where we hear about that sense of entitlement. I might have assumed that we're talking about people who are dependent on government aid and maybe you're trying to figure out, is it better for me to work or is it maybe I get more money on welfare than I do on work, and there's an attachment to government entitlements. But I was surprised to hear some employers say that some of their older workers come with a sense of entitlement. And I said, say more about that. And they said, you know, many of the people that I hire or that I've had for a long time, they feel like they've paid their dues. They have proven themselves. They have done their thing, and they plan to continue showing up and doing a little something, but they want to maintain their full pay, but they're not necessarily interested in learning anything more, you know, or getting trained for something more. And so I was just surprised at that. So we really had to listen and not assume as we were listening to employers. So
you're wrong with that?
if you own the company, you tell me. I certainly understand. And what I would say is perhaps a much... it's a more well-deserved sense of entitlement, perhaps, but employers weren't loving it nonetheless. So challenging a sense of entitlement, promoting honesty and integrity in everything that we taught, appropriate use of personal technology, We didn't do a single module on how to manage your personal technology because it just is woven through every bit and piece of our interaction in the workforce. Demonstrating a strong work ethic and then understanding the world of work and the employer's perspective. This series is written, it was crafted with employers and written from the employer's perspective. And there's something very powerful about that. I'll give a couple examples. What's your thought? Yes, sure.
I've got two examples from my family, so middle class, white American. We took our kid to college, and the talk to the parents was, we love your kids, we hope that you've instilled in them honesty and integrity. We can't teach them that. We can teach them the skills they need to get a job, but we can't, and they said employers are looking for honesty and integrity.
Yes.
But they can be taught this other stuff, but they had better be up with
them. Yeah.
That's my son. And then my sister, who's older than I am, so she's in her 65, and she lost her job.
Mm-hmm.
So what's she going to do next for another year until she can retire or whatever? Well, the same company called over her department and said, okay, but does she show up on time? Yes, she shows up. Does she call in when she's not coming? Yes. Okay, we'll take her. They didn't even ask what she can do. Because they couldn't get somebody who just came and showed up.
Yeah. I mean, the technical skills are generally easier to teach. I remember talking with an employer when I was first in this industry, and about the second or third time, I got to know her very well. She ran a carpet cleaning business, and we became, you know, good friends. And when she was looking to hire, I worked with people coming out of homelessness and addiction and out of prison and rescue missions. And it's really a lot going on, and we'd help them get ready to move forward. And I got to do the employment piece. So I would connect them with, you know, appropriate employers, and they could converse about whether they wanted to work together. About the third time, she said to me, you know, send me the right person, I'll train them up. Something clicked in me, and I just said to her, can I just say, I don't believe you when you say that. I'm never sending you someone who can't do the job. I'm never sending you someone who doesn't have at least the basic skills. And she said, Elizabeth, how long is it going to take me to teach somebody how to use our machines, how to mix these chemicals, how to drive our truck and fill our forms out? That could take hours. It could take days. It could take weeks. It might even take months. But she said, how long will it take me to teach someone to be dependable if they're not, to be honest if they're not, to care what my company does if they don't, to be nice to customers if they just can't be bothered? She said, I don't have time to teach that. And I said, whoa, I get it, you know. And I would start identifying, oh, I know who you remind me of. You know, and I'd call this woman, I don't know if you're hiring, but I found somebody you want to meet. You know, and she would create, I don't know if I'm hiring either. Let me meet him. You know what? I'm hiring. You know what? I'm not sure I'm hiring. You know, and it just, you find the right person. She would train them up and it, over and over again. Was your hand? Oh, your hand was up.
So is it really true that employers will take the time to work with someone who maybe has a learning disability or autism spectrum or a mental health issue, if they have those qualities, but it takes a longer time, will they really?
So the question is, will employers really take time to groom somebody up, especially if there's a learning disability and give them the time, give the person the time to develop those skills? I think it depends on the employer. It depends on the amount of resources they have, the scope of their business, if they have people to kind of cover for and support during those times. I will say we are moving fairly quickly from a buyer's market to a seller's market. And up until 2 years ago, we were in a buyer's market, and employers could be incredibly picky, and they were. And we saw the numbers in the recession. There were times when the ratio of job openings to people looking for work, not even the ones who'd given up, just people still actively looking, was 1 to 6, 1 to 7, 1 to 5 across the country, and higher in some communities. Now that's shifting. And I was in mid-Wisconsin about a year and a half ago, and I heard the director of the WIB speak, and she said, we are now in a situation where our employers literally cannot find people to find to fill their jobs. It's not a talent shortage. It's not that the talent isn't there. There's not even people there. She can't get warm bodies to come pretend to want the jobs, even if they don't have the skills. Literally, more jobs than humans to fill them. And that started, we always heard we were going to start seeing a labor shortage in 2015. That got pushed off slightly because of the recession, but it's going to hit us pretty hard, especially as boomers will eventually, they will retire now that they can or physically need to. So we're going to have a labor shortage, and it gives job seekers a lot more control, for better or worse. There's some downsides to that as well, but it forces employers to engage who they can and then resource them and teach them and train them. And there are some conscious movement in our communities. I know there's a movement, I want to say, out of Texas, spearheaded by a man who is the father of a boy on the autism spectrum, who not only wants his son to have great opportunities and people like his son to have great opportunities, but also sees the benefit of hiring people on the spectrum, the amount, in many cases, the amount of focus, the willingness to do precise and repeated work, the loyalty, and so really campaigning for employers to consider. And employers are going to start looking for hidden work forces. You know, they're going to start approaching prisons and saying, hey, can we start hiring you guys before they're released? Because, and can we train them while they're inside? Because they're going to need to. So I think that willingness and that creativity is rising. Yeah. Let's see. How to teach, a couple ideas on how to teach and really get the most of these sorts of lessons. Won't worry too much about that. This, I'll just acknowledge this, what we realized is having a strong curriculum that taught these things is wonderful. And having a staff of people who are is delivering that curriculum or working with people one-on-one around those ideas, there are some competencies that those helping professionals should have. And if they don't, it can eliminate all the benefits of using the curriculum, right? So if I'm teaching the workshop, but I don't demonstrate or role model anything that it does, do as I say, not as I do, right? If I don't know how to incentivize soft skills, so we're doing this great workshop on, well, why should I come to that? I don't know. Aren't you mandated? Well, yeah, but mandated isn't motivated. You know, how do we help people see? Most people, I would say, I've never met someone who woke up one morning and said, gee, I think I need to strengthen my soft skills. You know, we think that we're good. And if there's a problem, somebody else is misbehaving. So how do we incentivize that? How do we understand, infuse, sort of help to represent and even defend at times the employer's perspective? How do we show respect when we're teaching these things? Because it can feel very personal. It can feel, you know, a little over the line. Can't believe we're talking about this. Hygiene and such. How to say the hard things. Having some tough conversations, doing that well, helping people get unstuck, connecting people to resources. You bump into the need for lots of other resources that really aren't a part of your partnership, getting them connected to that. Accommodating the various learning and processing styles. Soft skills are not about what you know, it's about what you do, what you deliver. And so we want to teach in a way that's very practical and applied. And then helping people create action plans, accountability, and forward movement. Again, just because you passed the quiz and you got all the answers right, who cares? You know, when the bus doesn't come or the boss is a jerk or your kids get sick or a coworker takes credit for your work right in the middle of a staff meeting, how do you respond in that moment? That's really what we're trying to help people revisit. So having the people who are teaching this ready for this. This we actually, you have to be certified to use this particular curriculum. So we have a 2-day event and we do some work around these things. So in the end, we boil it down to these 10 topics, and these are the 10 modules that we use. So adaptability, communication ability is about verbal and nonverbal communication. That was a hot topic for employers. Dependability, not just time management, but priority management. Making the smartest decisions about what to do first, where to spend your time and energy. Presentability, about company culture or company image, sort of how we present in our style, our behavior, our use of technology. Reasonability, that's the mindset piece, managing your mindset, watching the attitude, getting along with people, critical thinking, problem solving, etc. Respectability is about working in multi-generational teams. And when we first created this curriculum just a couple years ago, five generations in the workforce for the first time ever in American history. One was just about done, and then there's boomers, X, and millennials, and there was what I was calling the Linksters. They may end up being called Generation Z. We'll see that they're only 21. The oldest of them are 21 years old this year. And so they were a couple years ago really not an issue. Well, guess what? They are now. So we've really got four active generations in the workforce, and they function very differently. They have different values and priorities and work styles and expectations and communication styles. And how do we work together to be the best of what we have to offer as an individual? And from my generation, I bring a perspective and maybe some skills and experiences that are unique to my generation. And how do I bring out the best in each individual, in each generation represented on my team? And the lesson is that multi-generational teams have an opportunity to be more effective than mono, or not all four of the generations. Fewer blind spots. Yeah. So it's all about how do we. It's a very positive approach to how do we work in this very multi-generational environment. And that was another very hot topic for employers. They felt like a lot of where they were losing money or losing customers or losing good people staff-wise had really come down to a lack of understanding and good communication and respect among the generations on the team. Suitability is about company culture, understanding how to learn the company culture, and how to, in a way that honors who you are, fitting in without selling out, right? Honor who you are, but also behave in ways that make the company successful. This is the sandbox you're choosing to play in. When you own the company, you can change the sandbox, but if you don't own the company, this is the sandbox. How are you going to be true to who you are? True to the mission that you're the mission that you're being asked to, the job I guess you're being asked to do, while you do that. Transitionability. Employers talked about the need to balance work, personal, and professional life. That's not true. They said people need to handle their personal business and not drag it in here so it disrupts my company, something like that. And so the need to balance personal and professional, not that there's always a hard line, depending on the company culture and the industry you work in, your leadership, all sorts of things can make that sort of a gray line, sometimes finer and sometimes broader with a little more play in it. But knowing how to understand where those lines are drawn and how to manage your personal life, there's literally lessons in here about how to plan your home life, doing laundry, grocery shopping, just getting things together, because a lot of times the reasons, and I can speak from my personal experience of working with individuals, when they wanted to quit their job, work really hard to get this job. They're enjoying it, they're learning, they're meeting people, they're getting paid for their time, and they decide, I can't do it anymore. I'm going to quit. Why? Not because they don't enjoy the work, but because they forgot to thaw the chicken out again. And if their kids have to eat, if the kids have to eat macaroni and cheese one more time, maybe they love that. But, and just not being able to manage work and life, it became too much. So that's really about making a smooth transition into the world of work, and then within the world of work, kind of balancing those two pieces. Right ability. In the workforce today, we write more than ever, because even jobs that don't have writing as a central function, in order to communicate, we use email, there's technology where you're inputting information and data, forms, etc. And so it's very hard to find jobs that don't require some writing skill anymore. And that's new. It wasn't necessarily true 15 years ago, right? There were a lot of jobs where you would do less writing than we do now, because we have a lot more written communication, more emailing. And so this is sort of the new crash course. What rules still apply? What are some of the new expectations? How to write a strong email, to text or not to text? What's the role of social media in your job? How do you figure that out? And then finally, workability, which is really one of my favorites. It's all about understanding the employer's perspective. Gives people a chance to see that their job exists to make the company successful. And there's an opportunity to make the company money or save the company money or cost the company money. And most American workers have never thought about this. You know, employers will ask, well, why do you want to work for us in the interview? And they will say, you're hiring, right? We are. I see you're breathing, but I want more. You know, they want more. They want to be chosen. And so this is a very powerful light bulb moment, not only for people who've never worked, but even for people who sort of been rolling along in a job and a career and everything went smoothly enough that they never really had to think much about it. And maybe now they've been displaced or they're trying to change. And this idea that if I could help an employer see how I'm going to bring more, you know, make more than I cost and bring more value than they're going to have to pay to get me, it's very powerful. We do a whole section on, you know, if you're the employer and you hire me at $10 an hour, does that cost you $10 an hour? It doesn't. We have a whole discussion. It costs you anywhere from $13 to $18 an hour for me to show up and pretend to be doing something. And I show up and I say 8 hours, and I come back tomorrow for 8 hours, and suddenly, ooh, that's costly. And so how do we bring enough value to justify keeping us? I taught this recently to a group of people who were re-entering the workforce after various difficulties. Many of them were coming off of welfare. Some of them had fallen into welfare for the first time in their life, never thought they would be there during the recession. And several of them had multiple four-year degrees, master's degrees. It was this real mixed bag of people who'd just fallen on hard times in the recession. And so I got a chance to do this module with them. Many of them had worked for years, decades. And this was just huge for them. At the end, I had a couple of them share what's been very powerful. How will this change the way you job search or work? And one woman, she said, this idea that I need to make more, be worth more than I cost them. She said, I'm so embarrassed to say, I've never, ever thought about that. I've always just done my job. And I have said, well, that's not my job. I do this. And she said, I can't, I'm so embarrassed to think that I work that way. If I were the employer, I don't know if I would have kept me. But she said, here's my question. Can I talk about that in the interview? I've got an interview next Tuesday. Can I say to them, look, I understand if you're paying me $13 an hour, that I need to be worth $25. You know, and I'd love to brainstorm ways that I could do that and be more efficient and inspire my colleagues to be better. I mean, can I just say that? I said, you want the job? I'm looking to hire you right now, and I'm not even like, sounds great. Just as this ability to think from the other side. So that's a powerful one. That idea, those ideas are woven throughout, but we didn't want to be subtle. We are not on a covert mission. We're writing it down. We're speaking it out. We're trying to figure out what is the assumption? What do they mean when they say that? How do we teach that? And not only how do we teach it, but it's not about saying, okay, so here's the one way to do it. Everybody, here's how we're going to be adaptable. 3 steps to being adaptable. We're all going to do it the same way. No, we're in different industries. We might be in the same industry, same company, but we're 2 different human beings, right? So we want to give strategies and then help them pick and choose the ones that will make them successful because it really feels right for who they are, but will also work for the people that they work with. So there's lots of ways to teach people to do this, and we want to help them find strategies that work for them and the employers they hope to work for. A couple other quick lessons, and you might just kind of vet whatever you're currently doing through these ideas. Immediate personalization and application. We're not trying to teach people master's course in soft skills. I don't care if they can't remember 80% of what happened, as long as they take the 20% that matters to them and makes them more effective and helps their employers. So lots of personalization and application. We want to teach reliable framework. Right, that they can use over and over and over again. This is from the reasonability module, Managing Your Mindset. We use this ABC approach. An action occurs in your life, a situation with action. It gets filtered through your belief system and you get your consequences. This is why 2 people can have the same situation occur and get different results because of their belief system, right? So we run through a bunch of scenarios on this and help them figure out if you're getting consequences that you don't want or that your employer is saying that's a problem, well, you may or may not be able to change the action. Maybe you can't change the fact that the bus does sometimes come just a little bit earlier, right? Maybe you can't change that your kid got sick. Maybe you can't change that this guy you work with, somehow he confuses your amazing work with his amazing work, and he continually takes credit for your awesomeness. Maybe you can't change that. Maybe you can, but let's say the action occurs. What you can change is how you're going to believe about it, what you're going to tell yourself, what you're going to do internally to sort of respond and react in ways that produce consequences that are healthy, that are forward-moving, etc. So this is a framework that people can use all over their life. And in fact, we'll teach this, and we'll have somebody come back the next day and said, oh, I did the ABC theory last night with my 15-year-old. So that's what's happening. You can choose how you want to believe about it. What's your first reaction? Think of a friend that you have who would respond very differently and get a very different consequence. How might they think about it? You know, what's the 180 perspective? What's the most godly perspective? And it helped people say, how else can I decide about this so I can change the consequences I'm getting? The other way to do it is to say, what consequences do I want and who's getting those consequences? Who remains calm in the face of that sort of behavior? Oh, my friend Janet. Well, what might Janet be believing and thinking? What's happening in Janet's head when this occurs? Because clearly what's going on in my head is that cannot be what's happening in Janet's head. So I'm going to kind of back my way into thinking a little differently. So I'm getting consequences. So those sorts of things where we give them things they can use over and over again in different situations. When I taught this, I had the pleasure of teaching a group of Johns Hopkins community physicians employees. All of their frontline managers went through a couple of modules, including this one. And they created all the scenarios that we did. So I said, what's an action that occurs in your average daily work life that produces consequences that are problematic? And all the hands went up. Well, I love it when my patient comes in for her 2 o'clock, which was actually an 11 o'clock. 3 hours ago and 2 hours ago, or was it 2 o'clock yesterday? And they're just sure that it, you know, and so it really kind of goes downhill from there. Okay, so let's, you know, what else can we tell ourselves? So we kind of use this whole framework to re-approach. So all levels. Move into action. We always do, what are my key lessons? What are my most important commitments? Who will I have hold me accountable? Next steps. Soft skills are not about what you know. It's about what you do. Sometimes in the toughest moments, those reactions. And so we want to help people. We're really cultivating behaviors and habits. And then we can get into that. Let me see what time it is. Okay. What time is the session over just about now? A few more minutes. What are your questions and thoughts at this point? 3:20. Okay. So let me acknowledge here, I've got a catalog, and Wayne, I'll hand these to you. You can pass them around. If you want a catalog about this particular series so you can learn more, feel free to take one. I think we'll do a Q&A and an information phone call at some point. So again, if you want to learn more, if you could put your name and email address there, or if you want to gather some people to sort of hear about this solution and ask questions, they can join us. Wayne has a table just outside the main sessions. And then I think you've got a full set of the curriculum, and I've got a full set of the 10 modules. If you want to take a look at them, they're given a good review in the catalog, but you can certainly take a look at them. And I will say there's a couple ways. It's not three steps, there's three ways. There are a couple of ways that groups are using this curriculum. One is in their ministries, you know, or in their programs. You can use this to help the people that you serve, whether that's clients you serve or community members you serve or your congregation, even your team, your staff. So you could use this curriculum to improve the soft skills for all those folks. You could also use it with local organizations or partnering organizations. There may be groups, and maybe this isn't something that really fits into your ministry, but somebody else could really benefit from this. Maybe there's an opportunity for you to get certified, and then either for free or for a fee, if there's an organization that has money to serve clients. You know, they're funded to work with people coming out of prison. They've got funds to work with, you know, women reentering the workforce, and they're doing the housing and lots of other things. Maybe they're even doing the job search piece, but this is a gap for them. Maybe you could come and either give it away, make the investment yourself. Or if they're funded, perhaps they then pay a fee to your organization or subsidize your costs. And then, of course, with local companies, again, that may or may not fit. But what we find is when you start showing this to employers or sending people who've been through this, employers notice. And you may certainly may get requests of people saying, could you come and do a lunch and learn? You know, could we go over the respectability piece with a generational conversation with my managers? Could we talk about your dependability with some of my newer workers who sort of forget to come to work sometime? And then could you do that as free. You just fund it yourself, cover the investment, or perhaps if they've got training dollars for it, it at least covers your investment, or maybe it generates funds that you then use to support other services. So a couple different ways to use it. And once you know how to use it, you find lots of need for it.
What's your... I have problems getting the homeless guys we work with to show up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So how do you get, other than...
Right. I mean, it is different when you have a more captive, sort of engaged audience because they live together as a residential program or a more programmatic environment. I would say when people are actively homeless, either in shelters or on the street, you do bite-sized pieces, you go to them. This is a series of 10 modules, but they all stand alone. So maybe you just take one that you think could be powerful for them. You know, pilot that one, see how it goes, and see. About 2 hours per module. We've got groups that are spending more time than that because they're embedding a lot of practice, habit building. But can you? You can. Yeah, these modules. If you know the WorkNet modules, there's a process embedded across those pieces. That's not true of these modules. Each module stands alone, and even within a module, you could certainly do a couple of pages, a couple of activities, and then come back to it. Yeah. Easy to do that. So Wayne has a table. I am here all the way through the end of the event on Friday, I'm pleased to say. And if we can be of encouragement or support to you, let us know, and then we will do it. We'll put out a notice about an information call, and any and everybody who wants to jump on and learn more and ask questions and explore, maybe taking some next steps, can do that. There's some possibility that Crew will raise up some facilitators who can partner with you all, similar to the way they might do WorkNet. So we'll explore that more as well.